Hey, don't you fuck with Flash Gordon. That is a
Flash
great movie.
Gordon! Okay.
Engage.
The Rancor's Ruffle. Great Scott.
Get off my plane.
Hello and welcome to issue number 58-ish. Of what's the show called? Rancor's Brothel. I'm your co-host Matt,
and I'm your co-host Cody,
and I'm nobody.
And if you enjoyed the music at the beginning of today's episode, that came from our guest,
who is... Ian Shannon.
Yeah,
me.
This guy.
And Ian, where can people find your works?
I have a studio thing that I do. It's migrantaudio.com or Migrant Audio on Facebook. And so if you're into just the technical side, that's that. But if you're into my music, I do a solo musical project that's under Sleep for the Weary. And yeah, that's where you can find just my music that I make.
Well, I hope everybody goes and listens to it because I fucking love the work you did for us.
Thank you.
Yeah, big fan. Like you, it was like in a, I don't know, it was like a 4-hour period where Cody's like, hey, my buddy Ian's going to make us a song. Cool. And then all, like, all of a sudden I had like three options. I was like, I like number two. So your creativity knows no bounds, Ian Shannon. Good job.
Well, thank you.
Cody.
Yes, sir.
What you been reading?
Well, in preparation for the book club this week at Android's Dungeon.
We're going to bring brownies.
Yep, that'll be great.
I stuttered so bad. We are going to bring brownies.
Special brownies?
Brown cow.
Special brownies? What?
Unique New York. Yeah.
Red leather, yellow leather.
By special, do you mean chocolate? Because that's what I was going to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
Okay, sweet.
Awesome. But I read, as you have mentioned on the show before, you've loaned me Compendium 1 and Compendium 2 of The Walking Dead, and I figured since you probably want your copy for, you know, the read-through, you know, the book club, I decided I should probably read it. So I read all of Compendium 1.
I work today, and I was like, did you read The Walking Dead? No, I forgot!
Funny. Yeah, she sent me
text. You live 10 feet from the office. Go get... No.
Shame on you. Shame on you, dear. She sent me a text message. She's like, Matt was so upset. Why didn't you tell me? I was like, I don't know when you see him at work.
I was not upset. I said it was fine. Roge, it's fine. Okay.
Don't wreck while driving.
I've read it like 14 times, so I don't think I'm going to really uncover anything new in the first six issues. But for those of you who want to join us, this Saturday, July 12th at 3:30, we'll be having a book club meeting at the Android's Dungeon. There's a monthly thing they're getting going on. This will be the second one. And free to all. Feel free to bring money and buy comics there. They close at 3 o'clock, though, so get there a little early. And, it's issues 1 through 6 of The Walking Dead. Everybody will have read and is ready to discuss. So it should be fun. It should be a good time.
I mean, it's a solid story. I see why a lot of people are huge fans of it. It's enjoyable. I mean, the characters are complex and interesting. Like we were talking about before the podcast started, it's not just a zombie story. I mean, it's clearly an element, but, you know, you get these complex relations and whatnot. Is it the best thing I've ever read? No. But do I like it? Yeah, it's good. It'll be fun to talk about. Especially those first six issues. I think it's quite an introduction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean,
that was essentially season one of the television show, for those of you that are big fans. That was about issues 1 through 6, maybe 1 through 8. So,
yeah, it was
check it out.
It was solid, and it's I could see why it's become very, very popular. But it's interesting, especially if you've played the Telltale games. It's Telltale? Yeah. There's a company that kind of works inside these known properties, and they create video games that kind of take place outside the realm.
Mm-hmm.
So... I think it's – you go to – what's his name? Is it Herschel's Farm? I think it's Herschel's Farm. Okay. You – and Herschel's Farm is also used in the show, I assume. I mean,
yes, it is.
Okay. You, as a character in this game, you meet up at Herschel's Farm. Daniel, if he listens to this podcast, he's going to yell at me because I don't know the timeline exactly. But you show up at Herschel's Farm and do things like help him repair the fence and whatnot.
Oh, that sounds like intriguing video games.
Yeah, like right you do – you interact with them prior to that other group getting there. So
You know what I love best about Lego Star Wars was when you can be Yoda and make him wash the dishes. Sorry, keep going.
Dick. No, but it's interesting how it weaves a story in, because you show up at Herschel's farm prior to them, and you kind of get – so all that stuff that he talks about happening in the comic, you know, about his son and all the people he's got in the barn and whatnot, the character in the video game is sort of the cause of why that happened. And so you're constantly moving in and out. You're meeting some characters. You're bypassing other characters that show up. And so it's a neat little universe that they've created, which I think is what really makes it a good seller. So,
oh, cool.
Digging it. Got to read Compendium 2 so I can get it back to you.
Very good. Yeah, get on that. Compendium. Like right now, there's Compendium 1 and Compendium 2 available. That'll get you through issue number 96. Then you got to get through the volumes, the regular graphic novel editions, which are epic. Everything post issue 100, like 100 to 124 was, I don't know, it was good. It was action-packed. It was fun. But after 124, shit just like everything got flipped on its head. Like you read the story about fucking just it, about trying to survive the zombie apocalypse, and you find some band of assholes that want to steal your shit or eat you or fuck you and eat you. And then at issue 125, it turns around and it goes in a completely different direction. It's awesome.
That's good.
Yeah. As long as that different direction is not Rick wanting to fucking eat you, because he's the good guy. Yeah.
It's always healthy to go in those.
There's a fucking tiger, too.
Tigers. Tigers are great.
There's a tiger in it.
Does it spout off philosophical wisdom? Because those are the best tigers.
Yeah, they fucking find some post-apocalyptic LSD.
And you, sir, what have you been reading in the last week?
Game of Thrones, the novel.
About goddamn time.
Yeah, I found a copy at Half Price Books. And I told Chad about it on Mad Chat this week about, like, so as a big fan of the show, it's been, you know, nothing but watching people I've grown to love die. So to start over and like the first 100 pages, nothing really bad happens.
Oh no, you have no clue what you're in for.
I mean, I know what I'm in for. At least I have an outline of it because of the show, but you know how those things change. But like the first 100 pages is all the happy stuff. Like, you know, the feast, the king has come, and oh, we found direwolf pups, everybody, and Jon Snow gets the albino one, and everybody's okay with that, and it's all right. And then Jaime Lannister fucks his sister and throws that kid off a fucking window. And that's then, you know, so now, like, the Hound went and ran down the butcher's boy. Like, I'm not very far into it, but I'm like, oh, fuck, it's all over now. It's all downhill. Joffrey's a dick. They just killed the direwolves. Fuck.
Yep, you're in for a whole world of pain.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I know I'm going to fucking cry, aren't I?
Yeah, probably.
I still cry at the Harry Potter book, so this is going to do it, man.
Sad, sad nerd.
Fuck you. Read book 7 of Harry Potter and don't cry at the end.
Oh,
fucking
God.
Epilogue.
God. Ian, are you a Game of Thrones fan?
I don't have what the layperson would refer to as cable or internet, so I don't get to enjoy any of those things.
It's a shame.
It is.
You should buy the DVDs or steal them from a neighbor.
Yeah, we're Erica and I are currently in the process of getting caught up on Breaking Bad and some of that stuff, but. With DVDs and things like that, but I'm over at a friend's house right now using their internets. And
well, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yep.
Well, then here, let's combine two things here. Who would win in a fight between Walter White and Rick Grimes?
Is this a throwdown on verses now?
No, this is just a theme of a variation. How's that?
A theme of a variation. Well, Ian, you are currently watching Breaking Bad much more closely than I am. What sort of fighting qualities does Walter White have?
Well, he tends to get very I'm very early on in the seasons, but it seems as though he's very intelligent and that he is a little bit of an emotional roller coaster, so he can fly off the handle and take charge, but come up with a very powerful tactical solution to different scenarios. So it's pretty formidable.
Gotcha.
And plus, if you get into a fist fight with him, he'll cough blood on you. And that's just gross. Everybody backs down from that.
I would like to, point out that, you know, Rick actually is self-described as Barney Fife. So he's not exactly violent. I think Walter White's definitely got him in intelligence and perhaps, you know, violent tendencies.
True. I mean, the whole thing about Rick Grimes is the only person he's really ever worried about is keeping his family alive. So if you remove them from the picture, you could definitely take out Rick Grimes.
He'd be an emotional wreck. It wouldn't even be a fair fight.
I concur. No, not fucking... Damn it, YouTube. Sorry. I don't want epic mealtime. I want epic rap battles in history, because I think they did Walter White and Rick Grimes.
Well, there
I think that's where the idea came from.
That's it. At episode 58, mark it down in your books, folks. We have officially stopped. We're just ripping off other people now.
I just used circular logic and came back to something I watched 2 months ago. Fuck. Okay. Right. Yeah, God damn it, it's Rick Grimes and Walter White. So check that out on YouTube. Because
it's clearly not an original idea of the Rancor's Brothel.
Not an original idea at all. And you can find out who wins there. So fuck. Fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck.
Maybe our version will be like Under Pressure. You know, it's just a little bit better than Vanilla Ice.
Doom, 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 doom. Okay.
That little bump makes all the difference, man.
That's funny. Hey, this episode of the Rancor's Brothel, Mr. Ian fancies himself a bit of a horror buff, and he finally saw one of the greatest sci-fi films of 1979. I have to say one of, because wasn't there a Star Wars in there?
I don't know.
70? Ooh, shit!
I think it's earlier. I thought it was 77.
Yeah, first Star Wars was 2 years ahead. So
whatever. I suck. I'm sorry.
Well, we should it's not just throw this out here as Ian being, you know, sort of our – I always love that when we have experts, what we call them experts, people who know more than we do on the show. So I feel like we should vindicate Ian as a horror guru. So lay down some horror knowledge here. Let us know what's up.
With as pertaining to Alien?
Oh, just kind of so that everyone knows that you know your stuff.
You got some cred.
Well, yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well. I suppose I don't have any good references to explain that being knowledgeable in horror movies doesn't necessarily make you at all accomplished in anything or successful in life. But I've been watching scary movies for as long as I can remember. I loved them when I was a kid. I loved all the Halloween movies and going over to my neighbor's house and watching some strange version of one of the Friday the 13th on Laserdisc and
nice.
All sorts of stuff like that. But I've been watching stuff for a while, and for whatever reason, never watched any of the Alien series. I saw trailers and things like that, and my parents would let me rent stuff from the rental shop in town, but for whatever reason, that was not one of them. So I would watch all of the Critters movies, but none of the Aliens movies.
The Critters movies had tits in them, man.
They
best
did.
Thing you get in this is like a panty shot of Sigourney fucking Grandma Weaver.
Yeah. Well, and in the third one, you do get a little bit of kiddie porn and necrophilia, too, combined all in one. So,
man, it's been a long time since I've seen that, apparently. I do not remember fucking dead teenagers in that movie.
Well, it's very far from those things, actually. But
it's Ian's special version.
Yeah, it's his fan fiction. He's just sitting there watching him typing away.
But I own quite a few horror movies, and I'm very partial to the things that are revered as the great horror movies, like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre and things like that. So
the Toby Hooper.
Yeah.
I really liked actually they did recently did a not a remake or anything, but like a continuation, a sequel of Texas Chainsaw in the modern era.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a fun watch. It wasn't like the greatest fucking thing to hit horror since whatever, but it was fun.
Sure, it definitely had some qualities to it, but
it was better than Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 with Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, the second Texas Chainsaw definitely had a fun character about it because it was so campy and silly in parts. But
it had Chop Top in it, right?
Yeah.
And then wasn't that the one with Dennis Hopper?
Yep.
All right. good calls. 1979 for science fiction, just so we all know.
Matt's trying to get some nerd cred back.
I am. That was the first Mad Max movie.
All right.
Good flick. Also was the worst Star Trek movie ever, Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Oh, you hurt me a little bit inside here, calling Star Trek the Motion Picture the worst Star Trek movie ever.
It was. I would watch Insurrection with red hot needles in my nipples.
I would like to challenge you with The Undiscovered Country, sir.
Fuck you, eh? I was prime age when that hit theaters.
That's nostalgia talking.
Yeah. Nostalgia makes things better. Super Mario Brothers the movie is an epic film.
For all the wrong 11. Reasons.
What?
For all the wrong reasons.
Fuck you, man. I'm sorry. I didn't like Star Trek the Motion Picture until I read a book. I think it was called Avenger. It was by William Shatner, and he always wrote the best Star Trek novels.
This is true.
And in it, they reveal that V'ger was actually sent from the Borg.
Oh, yeah.
And that made it, that tied it back and made it less shitty, but that, you know, that was a 30-year time span, so.
Fair enough. Mm. So, Alien.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Alien before, Cody?
Oh, yeah. No, I got the quadrilogy. I pulled that out last night because normally we record the show on Sundays, and due to some complications, we ended up recording on Monday. So last night, instead of sleeping like I should have, I popped in Alien and listened to the director's commentary, which is pretty awesome, and Ridley Scott's kind of a dick. But otherwise, really cool stuff. Some really good stuff.
I watched it with commentary as well. The first time I rented Alien, it was from the library, and back in the 80s, the library here didn't have a whole great selection of movies like it does today, so I brought home a VHS copy of Alien, and it was the VHS copy for the blind.
Oh.
So whenever there wasn't dialogue, there was a narrator saying what was happening in the background. It was a little irritating.
Something tells
Ripley
me that.
Ripley sees something dripping in the background. The monster slowly rears its head. Like, okay, I can fucking see it. God damn it.
You know, that probably ruins the, like, last 20 minutes of the film where she's just running around.
Yeah.
Kind of kills
Harry
the mood.
Dean Stanton stops for a cigarette. Oh, no!
Yep. More creepy music here. Shit's about to go down.
All the dialogue is there's something over there.
An alien is bursting through the chest of John Hurt.
Oh, my God. That scene. Jesus, that scene.
That scene was only shot, that was shot in one take with four cameras. That was it.
Yeah, they talked about that. Well, because what's her name? Is it Cartwright?
Yeah.
The woman with the short hair? Mm-hmm. They were talking about that. They scared the ever-living bejesus out of her because nobody but John Hurt knew what was going to happen. It's my understanding that in the script, it says, you know, in italics, because that's the classic stage direction for letting you know something's happening without dialogue, it just says, it emerges and has teeth.
So, the rumor that the cast, except for John Hurt, did not know what would happen during the chestburster scene is partly true. The scene had been explained for them, but they did not know specifics. For instance, Veronica Cartwright did not expect to be sprayed with blood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which,
there ain't nothing you can whip out that I can't fucking defend against.
Except for
I've
Star
Wars. I've got the IMDb at my fingertips.
Yeah, she was talking about how she thinks the prop guys were after her because nobody else really got hit with much blood, and she got, like, a gallon sprayed
off her.
Yeah, she got
carried.
Yup.
Ugh. You like Carrie, Ian?
I do. I like the original. I do not like the remake.
Didn't like the remake?
No.
Why? Let me ask.
It didn't have the same... For some reason, maybe it's the fact that they weren't filmed in digital or something, that just the older original versions have a more factor of you getting into it and just being involved in it. And the new one, the acting was very cheesy and just didn't pull me in, didn't do anything for me.
Fair enough. I do have to say for the remake, I was a big fan of the, of using digital effects for the telekinesis.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool to see. Like, if we could have that kind of effect work done in the Sissy Spacek version, that'd have been a badass fucking flick.
Yeah, that definitely contributed a lot. And
a longer shower scene.
My wife was a big fan of the remake, but I did not much care for it. Just it was mostly because, I mean, obviously the ending's badass, and we all know how it ends, but
yeah,
there's so much acting that leads up to that, and it was all pretty shabby leading up.
I do like Chloe Grace Moretz, though. I hope her career continues on the up and up. She's a fun actress. She always gets good stuff. When you first saw Kick-Ass, and and little girl says, I just remember her saying cunts. I don't remember what the phrase was, but oh god, that was beautiful. Children cursing, so great.
I think the best part she has is getting shot in the chest.
Yeah, can we go bowling? Yes, honey.
So Ian, having, I'm curious because I'm cheating a little bit because I saw some of your Facebook posts, but obviously Matt and I have seen this film before. But what were the major? It's almost like we've traveled back to 79 and you've just come out of the theater. So what really struck you about that film, given, it's Alien and it's 1979 and you have certain preconceived notions? What really tickled your fancy, as it were?
Well, what's really pulled me to get into the series and start watching it was mostly the work of H.R. Giger and his artwork and things that he's created. There's some rock bands that he's been involved with that that he did some album art for, or a mic stand for the lead singer of Korn and stuff like that. That was stuff that was cool to me when I was growing up, and knowing that he designed the Alien and some of the other facets of the film and some of the later films that really drew me in. So visual stuff was a very big thing that I was looking for, and so when I got it, I got the Blu-ray and I was going into it wanting to watch the theatrical version, but watch it on Blu-ray so that I knew I was getting how it was, but in vivid detail. Mm-hmm. And it blew me away how great it looked. I couldn't believe that it came out 2 years after the first Star Wars, which nothing against Star Wars. I love the Star Wars films and everything, but it looked like it came out 15 years after it. But I'm sure that Star Wars did a lot of favors, bringing a lot of attention to the genre and making studios willing to fork up some budget for something like that. So, yeah, but visually, it was striking.
The budget for this movie, 20th Century Fox had approved it for $4.2 million and doubled it based only on seeing Ridley Scott's storyboards.
Wow.
So
what's really interesting, having learned this from the commentary, was they really wanted to – so I think it's Giger. I don't know. I heard it like a million times last night. I kept going, that's how you say it?
Yeah, I was asking myself the same thing. It looks like Giger, but I don't know how to read.
I say, I think his artwork is so twisted, yet semi-erotic, yet organic.
Yep. Yeah, there's lots of genitalia.
There is. But, that happens in art. It was interesting because Scott was talking about in the making of it, he really wanted to convey that organic feeling, going to the so far as what we were talking about, the alien chest bursting scene. Some of that was stage blood, but some of the sort of guts that come out were actually rancid pig guts. He also talks about when the egg first opens, when John Hurt is exploring it, exploring the what do they call them, the travelers. Spaceship or whatever.
The engineers.
The engineer, that's what it is. The engineer's spaceship. When the egg opens up and those sort of tentacles come out, that's actually
cattle hearts.
It's like intestines and whatnot, and they just shot an air compressor through it, so it looked like waving mass of tentacles.
You know what the aliens' tentacles were made of? The shredded condoms.
That's fantastic.
And then the another fun one, the dead face hugger that they autopsy was made with fresh shellfish, four oysters, and a sheep kidney.
Yeah, and it's interesting. If you listen to the doc, as he's commentating, the film, you see him, and he's like, and if you pay attention, he's going to lift up the oyster here, and below that's the kidney. And as soon as he says it, that the fourth wall is broken, and you go, oh, okay, now I totally see how that's an oyster. But before that, you're like, this is something that's very organic and creepy, and it's – like he said in the documentary, it's something that's so similar to life as we know it that it's not hokey, but it's still alien because it's not how we're used to seeing it. And, Giger's art and everything influenced that, and I think it came together really well.
Do you like the overall design of the creature? because they did some neat things with it, like Geiger, HRG. it was supposed to have eyes, and he told them he said no, he wouldn't do it because he liked the idea of having an emotionless beast, and that eyes would humanize it too much, and that the front portion of the mask was actually made out of a mold of a human skull.
Yeah, I really, really
interesting creative choices.
I really dug the way it looked, and there was always something terrifying about it, even before I ever watched the film. Just seeing it in trailers growing up, it was really, really would stir up things in me. But now seeing it, I didn't really have any gripes about it, except, I mean, at the end when they ejected out of the spaceship, and you see it kind of flopping around out in space, and it looked like a dude wearing some sort of goofy ass helmet. But but other than that, I mean, what are you gonna do? It was 1979, and but it looked great.
He avoids the cliche of not seeing the monster until, you know, the movie's basically over by showing glimpses of it. Mm-hmm. But we never see it, with the exception of exactly what Ian's pointed out at the end, you never see it fully up and moving. So it doesn't look like a 1960s Star Trek episode with somebody in a rubber suit. You know what I mean? You're catching quick glimpses of it. You're seeing a tail. You're seeing a head. You're seeing an arm. You're not seeing the whole thing all at once, and I think it adds to the terror a little bit that it's just sort of a quick turn and then there it is.
The chest bursting scene was the top 100 scariest moments in history. That was number 2.
Wow. I believe it. It's a really great scene, and there is such sheer horror in Cartwright's face. It is palpable.
Oh, Veronica Cartwright and Sigourney Weaver had to wear white surgical tape over their nipples in the hypersleep waking up scene, so as to not offend certain countries.
Yeah, I thought the whole movie was pretty well done, very detailed, very believable for the most part. I mean, obviously going in, it's science fiction, but it was very convincing and able to get invested in the film. The only thing that took me away was the cat. There was something about it. I just, when it was done, I was like, why didn't they just call it A Pussy to Die For? Because that dude goes chasing after it, gets his ass killed trying to catch the cat, and then she goes after it and saves it eventually, but gets herself almost killed trying to save that cat again. What is the value
like
of this
mascot?
Cat? I mean,
because this is what you get when you have cat people. They're just weird like that.
I'm an animal
space,
lover.
No one can hear you meow.
It's awful.
Shut up. How long is the film?
It's like almost 2 hours.
The original cut was 3 hours and 12 minutes.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and the release was the release time was 117 minutes. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you, sir. So what do you suppose they cut out? An hour, almost an hour and a half of material.
Well, there's a lot of times that that you'll see studios take stuff out of a film for commercial success purposes to try and make
absolutely.
It more accessible, keep audiences from getting bored, and be able to play this was interesting when I was actually researching Alien 3, was a lot of the reason they cut a bunch of the stuff out of that really pissed off the director. They cut it down so that they could fit more viewings in the theater in a day, so more income that way.
Oh, that's fucked. That's not even like artistic. That's
business.
That's so capitalistic. That's awful.
Yep.
I would say if I thought there was another hour and a half, I would imagine if I were Ridley Scott, it's probably more exploration when the Nostromo originally lands.
See that?
I mean, it does such a great job of establishing itself of being in that sort of alien environment. You're on a grungy ship. It's constantly leaking. It's broken. It's much more like, who was it? Dan O'Bannon, who wrote the screenplay, talked about how he specifically asked them when the ship landed. He said he was so used to seeing sci-fi shows where it would just, you see the model just drop down and everything was fine, you know, like whoop, and we're on the ground. And he was like, I've landed on planes. That's not how it works. Like, it made it so much more real to have the shaking and to have the grungy environment where the ship is breaking. And I could just imagine Ridley Scott trying to impress more of that realistic view of space, I guess, as opposed to the nice, clean-cut sci-fi movies you get of the era.
Aliens and Alien 3 you also watched, Mr. Ian.
Yes.
Indeed. You told me before the show, I want you to tell the audience, what did you think of Aliens and Alien 3?
Yeah, I was posting about this on Facebook, and I expected to receive some death threats or something, but I really did not care for Aliens. I thought it was pretty cheesy. It was a lot of shoot 'em up and testosterone-filled stuff. Visually, it was...
Now, it wasn't a horror movie. You know that, right?
I do understand that. Okay. I do understand that. But there are much more impressive action films, especially from James Cameron. I thought that there were aspects of the Terminator series that I was seeing in it, similar things. Not necessarily direct pulls from the movie, but it just... I don't know. There was something I was reading that tried to give me a little bit of justice for it, that was saying it was an allegory for Vietnam, and that we kind of went in really really overconfident and weren't expecting the primitive battle to be what it was, and so it was supposed to be creating parallels there. But I for the most part, when I saw it, all I could think was a bunch of idiots just going in, and not to mention the first scene is there's this kind of camera robot thing that goes into the ship and explores where Sigourney Weaver's land and make sure everything's safe for the people to come in and pull whatever's out before anyone goes in. And when they land on the planet, just send whatever people out with whatever enormous guns they have. And they're turning small corners with these huge guns. What are they going to do? Like, you don't go sneaking around an apartment building with a bazooka or anything like that. And they even mention later in the film, the dude's got a gun for close range purposes. Everything in the damn movie was close range shit.
I think it's
okay, I understand your take.
I mean, I agree. It's just that I think Alien is such a brilliant film. It's really well done. It's the classic, you know, almost Halloween-esque type movie where you've got some unearthly creature that's chasing you around. But in space, you've got nowhere to go, so you have to face it. And it's so beautifully done, this horror movie in space, which surprisingly doesn't get done as often as it should. And it Aliens just isn't. It's not that. I mean, like we said, it's a war movie. It's not particularly good. It's a solid. It's okay. It's cool to see, you know, the evolution of the xenomorphs, but it's not necessarily great. A great second Alien movie, I guess is what I would say.
It definitely has some scary aspects. I think considering the fact that they weren't at all made or written together, that you have. If you look at them as the same picture, the first one's scary because it's small doses, little visual, and very fearful because of the unknown. But then you're going in expecting the unknown and looking for any small little thing, and then you just get overwhelmed and don't realize what you're in for and how over your head you are. I did find that very scary. So if you look at that in that term of things, then it does have a fearful aspect to it, but it definitely was much more of an action film than a horror film.
I just got depressed. On IMDb, when you're looking at the Aliens page, it says people who like this also liked, and it has V for Vendetta. V for Vendetta, Pitch Black, and Pandorum.
I could see Pandorum and Pitch Black.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're Black. There for V for Vendetta. You don't like Pitch Black?
I don't like Vin Diesel.
Well, fair, but it's still his best movie.
I like The Iron Giant. God.
I would also like to point out, since we're sort of in this, something else I found really, really interesting. I've always thought one of the best moments in Aliens, or in Alien, I guess I should say, let me specify the right film, the ending, after she blows up the ship. Because you get that moment of where she's looking at it after it's gone Nova or whatever. Mm-hmm. The movie should be over. And as I'm watching, as I'm listening to the director's commentary, Ridley Scott and Sigourney Weaver are being are talking at that point, and Scott basically says that he's like, okay, and this is where the movie was supposed to end, but apparently they secured from the studio another 4 days to shoot because he's like, what if it ends this way? So that sort of fourth act, that scene in the shuttle, was all last minute. It was just something that Scott was like, you know what? We haven't quite had enough of the alien yet, and let's do this whole sort of, I think it was almost an homage to Giger, because it's a little bit erotic there, you know, her kind of, like you said, in her what'd you call her, Granny Weaver, in her you know, bikini shorts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, they just have that very creepy stare down and just sort of watch each other, you know, as they've coexisted in the movie world for the last 30 minutes together. And I've always thought that was one of the most interesting parts of the movie, personally.
A friend of mine, Chris Cannery, has a very old comic, and it was the first Dark Horse release following an alien storyline.
Those are supposed to be fantastic.
Well, it's fun, but the issue with it is, so it was adapted from what was James Cameron's idea for Alien 3. And so, like, Newt's a character, and Michael Biehn, whatever his character's name was, they're in it, you know, from Aliens. But, you know, then they end up dying in the opening credits of Alien 3. But, yeah, you never know.
Hmm.
It was a very interesting comic. It was really cool. So I wish I could remember the name of it, son of a bitch.
So, Ian, we've talked about this on the show before. Have you seen Prometheus?
I have not. I intend to watch that after watching all four of the first Alien group, and I've heard nothing but good things about it. I've had somebody tell me today that it's the second best film of the franchise behind the original. Even though it's not necessarily, it's the same universe, but it's not necessarily the same subject I'm entirely. Liable. And so a totally different thing, but apparently it was very effectively done, and so I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Ridley Scott, in the director's commentary, talks a lot about the engineer, although I don't think he refers to him as an engineer. He refers to him as a
space jockey.
Yeah. So he talks a lot about how his vision, because it sounds like the commentary was probably, I have the quadrilogy on DVD, sounds mm-hmm. like the commentary was recorded maybe early to mid 2000s, and so prior to Prometheus, and he spends a lot of the commentary talking about how he wishes that, you know, he didn't want to necessarily go forward with the Ripley character. What he thought was fascinating is to see why that space jockey was there and what that was all about and why did he have these eggs and what did it all mean. And Prometheus does that, but it's interesting now because it's really, if you think about it, if you're just talking about Ridley Scott, you watch Alien, then you watch Prometheus. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's interesting to think of the films that way as opposed to thinking of Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and then Resurrection before you get to Prometheus.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense because it's in the same hands and quality control and the same mindset is all there. And that was speaking of which, there was a lot of negative commentary on the Alien 3. It had some mixed reviews and didn't it was probably the worst reviewed of the franchise. But a lot of I guess fans,
I think Rick
were
Liam took that honor.
that's definitely true. The third one though got some bad fan buzz because there was, I guess, a lot of companion stuff made with comics and things like that it completely broke away from that theme and storyline that a lot of the additional content would have, even though all of it was made by different people and none of it was in the same hands. It was just the same characters and themes and ideology and universe. So I did find it kind of strange that people were so up in arms about that, even though Cameron broke way off with his style of it and so on with every film because they changed hands so much.
Yeah.
Before we end things here, gentlemen, can we devote 5 minutes to Alien versus Predator?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Ian, Predator experience. Tell me about it.
Saw the first one when I was a kid with my dad. Also saw the second one with my dad. And they, I love both of them. The first is the best. The second one is not bad. And I think that those do a great job at being both a horror and science fiction action movie. I think those do it really well compared to Aliens.
Have you seen the more recent Predators film?
I have not. I need to, but I have not.
It's interesting, but I would say wait until... Are you going to watch Aliens versus Predator?
I have seen Aliens versus Predator, and didn't really care for it. It seemed kind of a hodgepodge.
Well, it's mashup, like, yeah, thing. Jason versus Freddy. It's like, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of weird. It's like, oh, well, these two things fight with whatever they typically had, so it is what it is. But yeah, it didn't do anything for me. But I didn't find it offensive or anything like that. It didn't bother me. It just seemed kind of like, okay, whatever, put it together. I don't go into that expecting to be engaged intellectually or anything like that.
Yeah. So then when you watch Predators or Predator 2, you know, for the rest of us in the theater that had seen the Alien films, when we saw the alien skull in the trophy room,
yeah,
we immediately had boners, tipped our popcorn cans over.
Yeah, it's...
You didn't get that. That sucks.
Seeing
nothing
that...
better than a predator boner. I'm sorry.
Predator boner.
I'll stop interrupting.
It did kind of evoke something in me when I was a kid, more so because I had that... It's very interesting to me how, looking back at it now, how I had this fear associated with just seeing the trailers of Aliens and now, or of Alien. And now that I've seen it, the style of it is that you don't really see it that much. You just kind of get little bits of it, which is basically the whole premise of me being afraid of the trailers, is that I only see it every so often and something scary about it. And seeing it in the end of Predator 2 was, it was kind of like, oh shit, there's this whole other thing that I know is scary and it's connected somehow and it's gonna, oh god, what could it be? So like the possibilities were interesting and engaging, but the ultimately when they came together in Alien versus Predator or Aliens versus Predator, it was whatever. It was potluck.
Are you gonna watch Requiem?
I suppose I will, but it's not a priority.
There, you know, one cool thing is how Alien versus Predator ends, with that Predator carcass having an alien chest burster. You know, it's a continuation of that. It's like a direct, 5 minutes after that movie, it's a direct sequel.
Huh.
So, it's got its tie-in, and it's fun. It's fun to drink and watch, or whatever.
What's really interesting, though, is that Alien versus Predator is not a new idea. I mean, the comic Aliens versus Predator goes all the way back to, like, the 90s, the early 90s, the late 80s. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They had a couple issues somewhere.
And, I mean, to the point where you even got crossovers that was like Batman versus Predator.
Yeah. Now, fuck you. I have all three of those, and they're amazing.
They are really good. I'm not going to lie.
I love them.
Good.
He beats the Predator with a baseball bat.
It's fantastic.
I really do want to see those. I need to pick those up sometime and read them, because I have an appreciation for the Batman stuff. And when you cross over the scary stuff into this dark themed character, I think there's a mental masturbation that goes on there for sure.
And you know what? So after you watch Requiem, that's when you should save Predators for. Because I feel that Predators deals, it's hard to explain, but I just feel stylistically that when you watch it, that there's a basis of Aliens versus Predator in that, about the coming of age of the Predator aliens, the Predators, whatever you call them, in that story. And then the casting is fucking amazing. Fucking Larry Fishburne, Adrian Brody, Walton Goggins, Machete's in it. Like, everybody's in that fucking movie.
I'd also like to take a moment to shout out to what I consider the best iteration of Alien versus Predator, that mm-hmm. probably neither of you two have had experience with, which is the 1999 computer game. So in this computer game, you could play as either a xenomorph, a predator, or a marine, you know, one of the Wayland Corp marines or whatever. And it was just like your Unreal tournaments or your Quakes, and you just picked one of those three races, and you just ran into a giant killing field and just massacred many, many people online. It is, in my in my opinion, it's the best computer game that's ever come out for any of the franchises. It's the best Alien game ever. It's the best Predator game ever because you got to live and breathe. It's so cool being an alien and to run upside down and across the walls and leap at people. And if anyone's out there, Steam 249 is a great game.
You can also, coming out this fall, Lego Aliens. Just kidding. Can you imagine the animatics, though, of, like, the Xenomorph, like, the tongue mouth coming out, but done in Legos? That'd be great.
I'm just wondering how you do the chest burster with Legos. Is it a sticker, or do you... Is it a special body that you put on?
Yeah,
it definitely has to be a special body.
Like the person switches their torso piece. Oh, beautiful. Anything to add about Aliens or Predators now that we're talking about it?
Not specifically with the two, no. Nothing like that.
Do you guys remember all the toys that came out back in the day? Well, about the time of Alien 3, where they were alien xenomorphs that had been hatched from different animals. So there's like a scorpion one and, you know, a dog one and all this crazy shit.
Yeah, those fell under the list of toys I was not allowed to have simply based on the likelihood of my parents stepping on them with no shoes on in the dark.
Like, well, think of that. Like, all the Alien movies were way too scary for children and way too rated R. A lot of cursing, a lot of blood. And yet they made an entire toy line out of it.
Yep.
That's probably why they had to sell it to whatever studio owned Predator.
The legal battles from the conservative groups. You can't have aliens as toys.
I feel like there should be a voiceover guy. Legal battles from the mid-90s. Anyway. Guys, Ian, thank you. Pleasure to meet you today, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really great to finally get to talk to you as well.
We hope you come back and talk to us about more nerdy shit someday. Maybe the next time you discover a classic that we've all known about. Have you seen Flash Gordon? I'm just kidding.
Hey, don't you fuck with Flash Gordon. That is a great movie.
Gordon! Okay.
Plus,
I like Flash Gordon from Ted way better.
That's the best band ever. Every soundtrack done entirely by Queen, automatically one of the greatest American movies of all time.
Highlander?
Yep.
And what was that one? Maximum Overdrive? The Stephen King one where the trucks all come to life and try to kill humans?
See?
That was done by Queen. No, that was AC/DC. Damn it. Queen is my favorite band, though.
Flash Gordon and Highlander. Fantastic.
And that one song from Shaun of the Dead. That was great.
Yup. Wait, what?
You ever seen Shaun of the Dead?
Yes, I've seen Shaun of the Dead.
And they're in the bar. The jukebox kicks on while the zombies are coming in.
Yeah. It's a fantastic scene.
They're acting like you don't remember it.
No, I know what you're talking about. I don't remember what song it is.
Yeah,
it's a great scene. What?
I just can't remember what song it is.
The people, they got those faces and they breathe and things.
Xenomorphs.
I've heard the word xenomorph way too many times today. Oh. Cut.
Like you say, you're going to do a sign off or you just kind of let me let it trail off?
No, I just want to sigh. I want it to end with a sigh.
Gotta edit this shit now.